while Ardsdale Baptist Church brings you the Word of God with practicality and simplicity. As you listen to this message, we trust that it will equip and empower you to find and fulfill your purpose.
Good morning, church. Okay. So, starting to finish well. I've started something new. I'm playing about with technology, and I pray that I will finish well. So I've got this fancy thing that I can walk around in and stuff. When I saw this, it reminded me, I don't know if you looked at Universe's Challenge, Bamba Gascoigne, I think he died earlier this year. And he always said, I've started, so I'll finish. So I think it gave the contestants encouragement so that even though I've started the question and the bell's gone, I will finish it so you'll have the opportunity. I also think it is for him as the quiz master, he was asserting his authority. I've started, so I will finish this. So I'll start with a story. I'm not Brother Isaac, Elder Isaac, but I will do a story. And the story is a familiar one. It's about the tortoise and the hare. So you can just imagine the hare challenges the tortoise to a race. Silly, foolish tortoise says yes and probably regrets it straight away. The night before the race, the tortoise is doing his press-ups and his everything and his lunges and his, can't do press-ups. But, and there's a party going on and all his friends are kind of, you're going to take it, you're going to kill him, you're going to wipe the floor with him. And the poor, did I say the tortoise or the hare? The poor tortoise is sitting there, wondering, did I make the right decision? Should I have said yes? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And you know how the story ends. You know that the tortoise is in fact the winner, was in fact the winner, and so he finished well. It seems therefore that it probably doesn't matter how we start because the hare races off, doesn't he? The important thing is that we finish well. Right, so I'll just give you an example. There are lots of people in this church who knows my challenges with IT. And I've masked it really well. I've got children, I've got friends, I've got colleagues, and if I want anything done, I always say to them, oh, do this for me, please. And then I wander off. I never watch what they're doing. They just do it, and all is well, and I just carry on. But then lockdown came in, and I had to teach on Zoom. And I had to prepare meetings on Zoom. And I remember one particular meeting. I was in one meeting. The people I should have been meeting in that meeting was in another meeting. And other people was in another meeting. Where are you? Where are you? The things of the host is in another meeting. But you know something? I remember being quite uptight about it. And my son said to me, Mom, make Google your friend. And I thought, whatever. But I did make Google my friend, and I'm not an expert, but I started, and I know that one day, I'll be that expert. So it's interesting what Paul has to say about finishing well, isn't it? And thank you. We didn't speak to each other, but you read 2 Timothy, where he says, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I've kept the faith, and there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will reward me on that day. And not only to me, but to you guys who've loved his appearing. And that's so encouraging, isn't it, to a church, just to everyone, when you hear that, you are greatly encouraged. I'd just like to very quickly go through some of the words in the text. Sanctified. A couple of weeks ago, Elder Allen reminded us that we are called to this to live a life of holiness. And this is being sanctified, being set apart to live this life of holiness. Saints. Some of us struggle to see ourselves as saints. And we have phrases like, well, they're no saint, are they? But the very fact that God sees us as saints and he's called us to this life of holiness, it assures us that we are saints. I smile a bit when I hear of people being made saints and there's this council that meets and they've got to agree that this person's done enough good in their life to become saints. Not for us. God sees us as saints because we're covered in Jesus' righteousness, aren't we? So, we've got Saint Keturah, Saint Felix, saints just all around me. There are saints. You know, in the Bible it says God has called some to be apostles. He's called some to be teachers. He's called some to be evangelists, prophets. But nowhere do I say he's called some to be saints. He's called us all to be saints. And so we live as saints. We strive to live that life of holiness, the life to which we've been called. When I first became a Christian and I asked, I had all these words, justification, sanctification, and I asked somebody about grace, and they gave me a nice little, acrostic. So it was God's riches at Christ's expense. Okay, I'm a new Christian, what does that mean? You know, so grace for me, is in a practical way, it's God's compassion, it's his mercy, which is driven by his extravagant love for us. It's the fact that he understands us as human beings, our frailties, and he still gives and forgives and gives. And to me, that is grace. Grace is the price God has paid for our salvation. That's grace. So when Paul talks about grace, he's talking about this network of things with a loving God who understands us, who comforts us, who protects us, who provides for us. That's God's grace. Yes, it is God's riches at Christ's expense, but in a practical sense, that's grace, the grace we're talking about. And I think that is the understanding and the experience of grace which Paul has had, because we know where he's coming from. And I'll just do a little background quickly. So Paul establishes this church in Corinth about 50 years after the death of Jesus. It was a prosperous city. People from all over the Mediterranean would be visiting it, lots of money. People away from home, they might get indulge in things they shouldn't kind of really indulge in. But lots coming and going. So Corinth had its moral challenges. It had a reputation for moral decadence. People did what they wanted to do when they wanted to do it. Also, because it was part of the Greek cities, the Greek kind of empire, whatever it was, they worshipped idols. They had temples for prostitution. Can't think of another way of putting it, really. So lots of things were happening. And the church that Paul decides to actually set up is right in the heart of this place. That takes a brave man to do something like that. Puts his church right bang in the middle of all of this that's going on around him. It's probably, though, not... it was probably not totally unexpected when the church kind of started going back into the world. You know, it's where they're coming from, it's where they felt comfortable, where they felt safe. And it just explains the kind of problems that lots of people faced. So when Paul receives news of what is happening, I don't think he was a happy bunny. I really don't. This was his baby. This was something that he'd set up, he'd put sweat, blood, and tears into doing it. You know, he'd gone on all these dangerous journeys to set up this church, and this is how you're rewarding me? Okay, can you just imagine for a minute, your child is probably not good at French, and so you give them tuition, which probably meant you've got to do extra hours at work. The school's setting up a French trip. You can't really afford it, but you want them to learn the lingo. So you go over the odds, get them to France. Holidays, let's go to a French-speaking country. You know, you've put a lot in, and then they say to you before the A-levels, you know, Mom, you know, all my friends are going out. You know, I want that life. I want to go back to what I used to do. Two possible responses. I know the response my parents would say to me, but there's a nice one. Well, you know, son, daughter, it's yeah, it's all right. You're near an adult. You can make your own decisions, you know. It's only 2 months away, your exam, though, so why don't you do it? That could be one response. What are you talking about? You don't want to do French. Do you know how much money I've paid for you to and all the rest of it, okay? So we had those responses. Interesting, though, Paul goes for the former. He knew he had a job on his hands. So he doesn't rush into telling off these Corinthians. He prepares the ground first. He recognizes that he needs to encourage, perhaps to remind them even of how they'd started their journey. So he writes this letter to remind the new church that they're not in the world, that, you know, though they're in the world, they're not part of the world, or something like that. He reminds them that they've been set apart, they've been sanctified, and therefore ought not to be behaving as though they were still in the world, as it were. And this letter is in two parts. The first, he salutes with a greeting, and then he goes into thanksgiving. See, no anger, just very calm, very assured. Although Paul's concern is that they do not compromise morality, he gently reminds them of the authority he has from God. So this isn't about me, guys. This is from God. This is about God. It's like he's saying, guys, I didn't walk into this on my own. I was called to this ministry by God. He reminds them gently that they too are saints, a people set apart to grow progressively in holiness. He greets them soberly and lovingly. Grace and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. When somebody greets you like that, it just puts down all the barriers, doesn't it? You just feel calm, yes. He's not going to tell me off. He's going to, you know, it's all right. Things will be all right. So he greets them in that way. You can just feel that sense of calm, even though they know they've not been good at it. He then gives thanks. He blesses them, reminding them that they've been saved and they are covered by God's extravagant love. And this should foster in them a certain confidence and a strength of character. Paul knows that a lack of the knowledge of God's grace will foster fear in their lives. He doesn't want them fearful because he recognizes that fear will drive them right back to where they're coming from. Because fear does that, doesn't it? It could be old friends. Oh, you think you're better than us, you're doing this, you know, come, you know, all sorts of things. It could be taunts. So he needs to arm them confidently so that they become more grounded in the truth of this new life, the new life they've started. He needed to remind them of the wonderful message of salvation. Later on, I've not given you a spirit of fear, but of peace, of love and a sound mind. But I also believe that when Paul reminds them of God's grace towards them, he's also reminding himself because he knew where he was coming from. And because he knew where he's coming from, he knew the grace he'd received from God, he therefore knew the grace he ought to extend to these new Corinthians. He affirms the Corinthians in their faith ever so gently, coaxing them back to continue their journey of faith. The next part of the reading, he then turns to God in a thanksgiving prayer for the way he's blessed the church with giftings. He mentions specifically the gift of tongues and of knowledge, and we know later on in the letter he does go on to address how these giftings have been abused. But for now, he just reminds them that, you know, the Lord has blessed you. You have all these things happening. So just remember that. When later on he reprimands, we don't hear from a Paul seething in anger because he's prepared the groundwork. He's affirmed them. He's reminded them of who they are. So when he goes in for the kill later, well, I should say going for the kill, when he goes in later on to really give them a good telling off, because he's prepared the groundwork, It's a Paul who is disappointed, but not seething in anger. So that calmness continues throughout his letter. And because of this, I believe it's more likely that the church will be more responsive, because just of the way he's approached it. And just something in it for us. I know certainly for me, people used to say count to 10, and I'm counted to 10, but I'm still 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You know, you're waiting to get to 10 because, my goodness, when I get to 10, I'm going to lash out. But Paul doesn't do that. You know, he really appreciates them. He reminds them of who they are before he actually does the reprimanding. And there's also that bit in Proverbs, a soft answer turns away wrath. Yes, so if we do it softly, it just doesn't get the other person's back up. I'm hoping that this is a message for us as well, all these little things coming through how we should be conducting our Christian lives. He reminds them of the change that's come over them as a result of them knowing Jesus. And now he tells them that they have everything. They lack nothing as they wait for Christ, and on that day they will be blameless. Paul sees them where they are, but he looks beyond. So he looks beyond to the day of Christ coming when they will be blameless. He sees their imperfections, but he reminds them of the prize, Christ's return. Again, I think there's a lesson here for us. We are not where we need to be, but by God's grace, his loving, extravagant love, we will get there, but we need to make the start. We'll get there because God, who has called us into fellowship with his Son and with each other, is faithful. We are called into fellowship, first of all, into fellowship with Christ, but also into fellowship with each other. And because of that, you know, we can prop each other up as we go through this sometimes frantic journey of being a Christian. Could I have the video, please? I'd just like to show
Johnny has to win.
Now.
And to be sure of taking the title. And right now he seems to have lost control of his legs. And this is worrying. Oh, and he's starting to slow. And there is a little way to go. There's half a K to go. And Johnny is running out of time and is losing. He's losing his sense of direction. This is worrying. Oh, goodness me. This is a horrible sight. Jonathan Brownlee has lost it now and has staggered to a stop at the side of the course, and Alistair's stopped to help him along, and Alistair is going to try and carry his brother home. Dramatic scenes in Cozumel as the Olympic champion carries his younger brother towards the podium.
Oh my God, I cannot believe what we are seeing here. Matt, is this allowed? Is he allowed to help his brother? You know, is that part of the rules? I'm not too sure. We've never seen anything like this before.
Unbelievable scenes. Unbelievable scenes in Cozumel. The Brownlee brothers arm in arm, but it's not by way of celebration. Henry Schumann's celebrating. He's going to win this race in Cozumel out of nowhere. But we have to be concerned about the health of Jonathan Brownlee, and they're not even on the final stretch yet. Schumann wins in Cozumel. The brothers are coming home arm in arm to finish in second and third, but Johnny can hardly stand, and Alistair is having to drag him across the line and pushing him home for second. Johnny finishes in second. Goodness me, what an incredible conclusion.
Thank
here
you.
In Cozumel. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, it touches you, doesn't it? That it really does. That you know, that love for his brother, that sense of
worrying scenes?
Family for him, but for us, it should be that sense of fellowship, that sense that we belong to each other, that sense that, you know, sometimes we need to be a crutch there for each other. I just thought that was a really powerful way of actually demonstrating it. So sometimes it's just a gentle coming alongside people struggling. Sometimes it's a word of encouragement. Sometimes it's a prayer. Sometimes it's practical support in a number of different ways. And you know that, as I said, sometimes we might need to be that emotional crutch for each other. And the verse, bear each other's burdens, comes to mind. So just like the Brownlee brothers, we can support each other, church. We can lift each other up as we head towards our finishing lines and looking forward to hearing that, well done, the good and faithful servant. I would absolutely love Paul to be my tutor, my teacher, my mentor. He's so positive, he's so affirming. He sees the best in the church, and even more than that, he sees where the church will be, where the church should be, where the church can be, where the church must be. And just the question, do we look for the best in others? Do we see the imperfections first and kind of focus on those and, you know, build our opinions around those? Or do we kind of take people on a journey and see where they could be? Do we encourage those on the starting lines, or do we bash them with don't do this and don't do that? And I remember my church, you don't wear earrings and you don't wear lipstick and you don't wear trousers and, you know, all the don'ts. You know, on that Christian journey. And when you're a new Christian, when you're just starting out, it's really difficult. It's really difficult. So we just need to be mindful of how we encourage people, because we want them to finish, and we want them to finish well. So are there any similarities between us and the Corinthian church? Sorry. Well, we too have been called and set apart for holy living. We too fall short of God's standard. We too have been extravagantly blessed and equipped for faithful living. We too live in a diverse culture, and more we're seeing that coming in. You know, all sorts of new ideas about how things should be in education. So you know, we're in that kind of whirlpool, that kind of melting pot, aren't we? But you know what? We too are committed to the power of the gospel to change lives. And I think that's the one we really need to focus on. We are committed, just like Paul. This is where you are now, but my goodness, you're going to finish well. So we're not that different. And I just encourage you over the next week to be Paul to ourselves and to those who might need to be affirmed in their faith. As we acknowledge where we are on this journey of faith, let's encourage ourselves that today could be the start or even the restart of that victorious journey of faith.
We trust that you've been blessed and believe that this message has brought you greater understanding. For more information, or to follow up on what you've heard in this message, visit us on www.phbc.org.uk. God bless you.